It's the Film Drunk Frogcast. We're back again for another week, another exciting week. I know you guys are excited, because I'm excited. We got the irregular regular, Mr. Matt Lieb, sitting to my right.
Goddamn right.
And Brett, sitting to his right.
I'm sort of in the center.
Yeah.
I'm in the center.
And then sitting to the right of that, we have our this week's guest, Mr. Aaron Barrett.
What's up?
How you doing?
Good, man.
Feeling good?
Yeah.
Are you feeling ready to frot?
I napped.
Oh, that's good.
You need to get a good nap in before a good broadcast.
It is a good prerequisite.
Yeah, because there's a lot of working out that happens. Usually,
any internet job, really.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Vince and Brendan, who is not here today, usually do a push-up contest during the broadcast.
It's true.
Oh. You really got to, you know.
If you don't pass the feat of strength, they mute your mic for the rest of the episode. You just have to sound all far away.
Yeah, it's really no good. So I'm glad you got your rest. It's good.
Thank you.
We're going to tear some phone books in half. You know?
Yeah.
You know I can do that, right? You've seen me do this.
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah.
Can you really?
Have you seen him do it?
I've done it before.
No.
I'm really good at doing it. It always surprises people because I look so weak. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually very strong.
Because there's like a trick to doing it.
There's a trick.
I know what the trick is.
It's finding a phone book from a town that has a population of 90 people.
There's that.
Grandma, no.
There's also, I don't want to go into the details of how I do it, but all I can tell you is
you push it together so there's space between the pages and they rip individually.
Yeah, but it takes a while to get it good.
Right.
All right? Like, people try and do that, but they can't figure it out. A fly almost went in Vince's mouth. Yeah.
Anyway, well, we all saw The Room this week, and surprise, surprise.
I did not! Oh, hi, Mark.
And the, well, not the reason that we had Aaron Barrett on, but I mean, it helps. But he worked for Tommy Wiseau for 10 years, 11 years?
11 years.
Insane.
In 1 month.
Which is amazing, because he's a very mysterious creature. In the world, well, just in the world, but in the cult film world and the world in general.
Yeah, you really don't hear much about him. Like, the most that's ever come out about him has been because of Greg Sestero, who put out The Disaster Artist and finally, uncovered, where he's actually from. And,
well, he never came out and said it.
Yeah, that's the thing. That you never actually get that far. That just shows you how secretive his life is, and it's I always found that really fascinating. It's like, he's always like, as an American, I believe. Yeah. You're just like, what are you talking
about? Like a Yeti or a Frankenstein's Loch Ness.
Because, the big mysteries around him are that he won't say where he's from. He tells people he's from the Louisiana region of the United States. And a few of the early ads were that he paid the publicist for were, this raging Cajun is the new Tennessee Williams.
It's amazing.
I'm sure he said that.
And it's crazy. I've known you, Aaron, for a long time, or 4 years or something like that now. And I had no idea that you worked for Tommy Wiseau until just this moment.
Right.
And I am so excited to ask you questions, because I've been obsessed with The Room for a long time.
Maybe before we go to Tommy's backstory, we talk a little bit about the movie in
general. Yeah, we should, totally.
Brett watched it for the first time today.
Half of it, and then I had to fart over. But half was...
Oh, you're not going to believe the ending.
Hi, doggy.
That was... How did you cut that? Because it was a stream of 17 lines back to back with no punctuation or pausing or inflection.
It's an amazing scene.
It was just oh, hello, Mark. Hi, doggy. These are flowers are for
you're
me.
You're my favorite customer. Yes. I'll have 1,000 red roses.
Yes, it's me again.
Yeah. That's the flower shop scene.
You're my favorite customer.
Famous for just having everything can... A bunch of pointless interactions just condensed into the shortest amount of time possible.
Yeah.
You got the feeling that was definitely shot guerrilla style in one take. Because you're like, we have to get out of here quick. I don't know. I turned into...
Oh, according to the... According to the book, they... In the flower shop, there was these two ladies that were running a flower shop up on the wharf. And Tommy Wiseau offered them $20 to shoot there for 3 hours or something like that, and they surprisingly just said yes. And then they put the flower shop owners in the movie And then, like, the dog was there for, like, the first 10 takes, and he only noticed it after, like, 10 takes. Apparently, it was just sitting there motionless.
Oh, hi, doggy.
And, oh, hi, doggy was actually just, like, completely ad-libbed.
It was just, like,
that was when he actually noticed the doggy, which is why it's his best line read in the whole movie.
I don't
movie.
Even think I noticed that, actually.
It was weird.
He says, oh, hi, doggy.
Yeah, hi,
that's
doggy.
What he just played. Oh, my God.
So I didn't have doggy. Any.
I don't remember that.
One more time.
Hi, doggy.
So I didn't have any context.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah, it's all.
Oh, hi, Danny.
Yes, I'm glad you got. Wow.
Oh, hi, Danny.
You did your work.
No,
this is a soundboard. It was easy. Well, I was gonna do the work, and then I saw.
Oh yeah,
someone already did it for me.
Oh. So is this a thing? The most I had known about it is last week when I was like, "Who the fuck is Tommy Wiseau?" And you like half-heartedly explained it.
Yeah, no, this has been a thing for a long time. I first saw this movie in 2008. And it was given to me by a guy. It was like as a DVD he burned. And I was like,
what? Have a little skull and crossbones, yeah. Sharpie on the cover. Yeah, right. It's like, look, don't watch it backwards, man.
And I said, well, what is it about? And he goes, I can't explain it. If I explain it, you won't.
Language fails.
Yeah, you just need to see it. And make sure you watch the interview with him first and then watch the movie. That's the way I was introduced
to
him.
I didn't get to see the interview first.
If you see the special... I did see them.
Should have recorded that.
The DVD has like an extra that's basically just an interview with Tommy Wiseau where, you know, some text comes up and he answers questions, quote unquote, which I don't believe anyone has ever asked some questions.
How's Louisiana? Oh, it's great.
I love it.
The best is that it's half dubbed. Like there's parts where he answers and like, he didn't like his answer, so we just ADR'd.
All of his stuff is dubbed in the movie and it was creeping me out because he's not really like, he like half opens his mouth and then a sentence comes out.
Yeah. I'm going to take a nap. Yeah. and that was the dubbed version. I'm going to take a nap, so which means that he did it worse. I mean, it must have not even sounded.
I just human. The mouth gestures that he was making while he was being dubbed made it look like he was just the whole time.
Did you get to the part where he asks? Where he's on the roof with Denny.
Yes.
And he goes,
the drug dealer.
Well, no. Well, there's that part. But then I guess it's before that part.
Stop ganging up on me.
Denny is explaining.
You're not my fucking mother.
Can we toss around the football while we're doing this?
Yeah. Oh, God. We really should.
That was so they throw it so weird.
No, did you see? So, like, Denny's explaining how he might be in love with
Lisa. Yeah,
and then
part.
He goes, what about Elizabeth, huh? And when he's... When he says, huh, he puts the entirety of his tongue into his cheek. It sticks out like a goiter. Like, he looks like he's just, like, lives inside of radiation.
Yeah.
And he just kind of, like, he bathes in it.
Isn't there something else in the movie that's weird about her neck?
Oh, yeah.
There's something popping out of her neck.
Yeah, she sits in this position so that every time she talks, like, one of her, like, neck tendons kind of pokes out.
Yeah, it's so weird.
And I didn't notice that until I saw it in a theater with people who were also obsessed with it. And every time that happened, everyone goes, ah! And it just keeps happening.
He seems like maybe some sort of really smart newt or skink that had just sort of recently come upon a human suit and was just like, I will make a movie.
I must write script in English. I think to me, the biggest issue with it, and
that's a very interesting story. When I moved to San Francisco with two suitcases, and I didn't know
YMCA. Oh, yeah, there's one. So I think he wrote the script in English, and that's the issue is that that's why there's so many lines repeated over and over and over again, because he doesn't have that much of a lexicon. He doesn't have that much to draw from.
On the soundboard there's six different I don't want to talk about it under
how many don't worry about it.
Look, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Then why did you bring it up in the first place? I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know.
Is there any don't worry about it? There's got to be.
Don't worry about it.
Don't touch me, motherfucker.
I love that line.
I love the way he says motherfucker.
Don't touch me, motherfucker.
Get out.
So it's weird that like it became a thing, and I seriously didn't see it until like maybe a month ago.
Right. Yeah.
And in the book, Greg Sestero credits one of the 5 second film guys, Michael Rousselet, for like partially starting the entire like cult
really?
Of the room.
Okay.
So Yeah, and I've known him for like 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know at what point it started gaining a lot of steam. I remember not too long after I saw it, I realized that they were playing it in L.A. every month, and no one had heard about it. But then, like a year later, like half of the people that I knew who were into shit like that had heard about it. And I just I've shown like 11 people this movie, and I sit with them.
How do you describe? Like, how do you pitch it?
I pitch it as like you just need
biggest
to
piece
watch
of
it.
Shit ever.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's I try not to pitch it as the worst movie ever made because like then yeah, you're yeah,
you gotta surprise them a little bit.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot of just bad movies.
Yeah,
this is because like,
it's not actually. I mean, that's
because you do get the sense that. I mean, you can't help but ask yourself. And yeah. For me, when I watched it, you know, I was like, yeah, this is completely him, you know. And I think a lot of people who didn't know him or whatever are just thinking, is this a joke? I mean, what?
Yeah.
Is this serious? And I, knowing him for so long, I knew it was completely serious and I knew he had complete control over it.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's so bad, is because he had complete control over it.
Yeah. It's 100% his artistic vision.
And I think that's why it's interesting, is because it's this weird window into this completely bizarre human being
and completely just not self-aware at all, and he has no idea how vulnerable he looks in this movie. Like the things like people repeating like Johnny's such a wonderful guy. Yeah, yeah, like we get it, you're calling yourself wonderful, we know what you're doing.
And like, I'm getting flashbacks.
Oh, I love that.
Just, how is his like stringy butt muscles are just clenching and unclenching where he like fucks.
Shot got repeated like 3 times.
Oh yeah.
So wait, how many viewings do you feel you need to acclimate to the pressure? Because I only got halfway through it, and that was more than I could take. Like, I have a medium tolerance for awkwardness.
The first,
and I was like maxed out. My threshold was reached.
See, I didn't get awkward from it.
Oh, I was like,
I think watching it by yourself is not the way to go. Like, you kind of have to have it on in the background, like with a bunch of people sort of drinking.
It was like watching my parents fuck. I was trying to come up with the right metaphor to describe the combination of shame and disgust and confusion and pity a little bit.
Yeah,
that went into what was happening to me at that point.
Yeah.
And that was the best I could
do. Yeah, you got to watch it with people. I mean, every time I would show someone it, I would watch it with them. And I would just because, you know, the first 30 minutes, you need someone to look back at and go,
is this fucking real? you need a panic button where you're like, reality? And they're like, reality.
Yeah. Don't worry. I am your anchor. Yeah. Like, don't worry. I'm your totem.
It's like your acid guide where you're like, no, I've done this before. Right. Come with me.
If I start melting, then you know that you are in the world. But don't worry. I'm your totem.
No, I see his butt muscles, too. I don't know why he's trying to impregnate her belly button.
Yeah. Yeah, just go with it.
Everybody betrayed me. I don't have a friend in the world.
So I saw it when I saw it. I was at a friend's bachelor party, and there was a rule that the room had to be on like the whole weekend.
Oh yeah, that's great.
So it was sort of like on, and you could come in and come out, and it wasn't like you sit down and you watch it. You sort of come in at different places, and you come out, and you eventually see the entire movie, and you see like certain parts over and over, but.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to kind of experience it.
Yeah, I mean, there just needs to be people. I think that's the one.
And you
the
need to be drunk.
Yeah, you don't need to be drunk.
Well,
you just,
sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah, well, okay, I'll admit, the first times that I saw it, I was like high on heroin. and I was on a bunch of drugs for like the first few times that I saw it. But even as a sober person, I was like, this is hilarious.
You don't need chemicals to add to the weirdness that is the room.
It's a drug in and of itself. Like, it really is. Like, it trips you the fuck out. Just because you're like, every scene is exhilarating and how awful it is. Like, every scene is worse than the next scene, and you're just like, this can't possibly get any worse. Yeah. You keep thinking it's going to be boring, like Plan 9 from Outer Space, where you're just like, I get it, it's bad, I get it. You know, like, but every scene you're just like, this is, how did he fuck this up? Like, how and then all of a sudden they're on a roof that's so obviously green screened, and you're like, why did they spend the money
to go on a roof?
They could just have shot this on a roof. I mean, well,
okay. So the part of the funny thing about having just read the book, he spent $6 million making this movie.
What?
Yeah, $6 million.
Part of where the money went
is that
was,
just cast. You have to pay SAG actors.
Okay, well, part of the reason was he. He bought all the camera equipment instead of renting it.
Yeah.
He shot it simultaneously in 35 millimeter film and HD video.
Next to each other.
This is 2003. So it's like you got mini DV and all. Like, this is not,
Meaning he didn't know where it was going to go. So he shot it in both HD video and 35 millimeter film, meaning he had to have two separate crews to sort of man both of those things.
Yeah.
And then.
So that's two movies, basically, that he shot.
And like I think that he went through like two or three cinematographers in the course of it. And
he picked the right one.
Yeah, and so the roof shots were apparently shot in the parking lot of the equipment rental place, one of the equipment places that they were using. And then they finish the whole movie and they go back to San Francisco to shoot. The composite shots of the skyline. You know how there's like a bunch of random establishing shots?
Yeah.
All of a sudden there's the Transamerica building and then they go back to arguing.
So you know it's... Yeah.
So they shoot those from a roof of a building that he owns. Yeah. And they're like, why don't we just shoot the scenes of the roof on the rooftop that you own instead of renting time and shooting them in a parking lot and then using green screen that we shot on your roof to make it look like a roof.
There's actually good views from that roof too.
Yeah.
That's you can see Alcatraz from that roof.
That is.
I used to watch the fireworks up there.
That is amazing.
In a few minutes, bitch.
I feel like that just answered the question in my mind of like, can we talk to Aaron?
In a few minutes, bitch.
can we talk to Aaron now about Tommy? In a few minutes, bitch. All right, fine. Okay, thank you.
Well, that's a very interesting story when I moved to San Francisco.
You see, that whole thing that he says is so great because he says, when I moved to San Francisco, I had two suitcases and I hit the YMCA with a check, a $2,500 check that I couldn't cash. Oh, why couldn't you cash it? Oh, because it was an out-of-state bank. Anyway, did we need? No, we didn't. We didn't need that information. But it just it enriches the story in a way that he did not intend it to. And I just love that.
So quickly before we get to Aaron Barrett, and
I'm
desperate to know what you know.
Yeah.
So in the Greg Cicero book, he basically met Tommy Wiseau and Gene Shelton's acting class in San Francisco and eventually just like asked to be a scene partner. And he got the feeling that he was the first person that had ever like tried to be Tommy Wiseau's friend. And so they
instead
had,
of getting
weird...
paired during group exercises where it's like, why don't you guys work together?
Yeah. And then they had he had like this weird single white female type relationship where Tommy Wiseau was always...
That's really cute.
Anyway, so so he drove up with he went off with Tommy and like got in his like crazy like Mercedes and he was always like super paranoid about like you can't tell anyone in class about where I live and what I do and like you can't tell them about my car and so he's like he's super mysterious, doesn't tell anyone his age, doesn't tell anyone where he lives and he says that he's from the Louisiana region of the United States.
So, I mean, obviously he's hiding from something, but I'm not sure if it's like he's hiding from something that's like a criminal past or is it just shame?
Inner demons.
Is it inner demons and shame from being like this foreigner? And he's like he desperately wants to be an American and doesn't want to be judged for being the like obvious Eastern European trash train wreck that he actually is, you know? And now I don't mean that like completely derogatorily. I mean like some people are just born that way, you know what I mean? Like he is that. He can't help but be that. I think he doesn't see it. I think that's why he liked Greg, because he saw Greg as like this all-American football boy, you know? Just like he looks like, you know, a caricature of a white American Harvard graduate who's going to be president. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I need to check out more of that book, but it just, wow. I don't know. So what did he see you as, Aaron? You knew him for 11
years.
How
did you two get involved? Let's say that.
Yeah.
I moved here. And I still remember the dates cause I got this job exactly a week after I moved here. I moved here August 7th, 91. And I was working there August 14th, 91.
And where's there?
And this guy, well, the guy who hired me was, named Matt and I became really good friends with Matt. He's 8 years older than me and he had been working for Thomas. We called him Thomas back then. He didn't go by Tommy.
Yeah.
His Hollywood name, I guess.
Yeah.
And actually, he was really adamant about that when I first started working there. If you called him Tom or anything like that, he would kind of like, no, you call me Thomas.
Which is funny because in the book, like in the Gene Shelton acting class, like she would call him Thomas and he's like, no, no, it's Tommy.
Yeah. And during, I'd say the first 2 months that I worked there.
Where is that? Where are you working?
Okay. So it's this store called Street Fashions.
Okay.
And we both mostly sold Levi's and Converse. When I first started, he had...
And is this on the beach? The beach
street? On Fisherman's Wharf. Okay. The store he had when I first started working there was at the Anchorage Shopping Mall, right where the that little alley is where the In-N-Out Burger is now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He had a spot there. He had a spot over on Taylor Street, which is near the Fisherman's Wharf sign. There's a Jack in the Box something there. And then he had a little... souvenir shop, which was in Casignola's. There's a little walkway in Casignola's, and there used to be half of it would be a crab, crack crab, and mm-hmm. yeah. and our side was sweatshirts and snow globes and shit. And I was 18 when I first started working there.
Yeah.
So for the first 2 months, he actually, whenever Matt was like the general manager, whenever Matt had days off, Thomas would work. Uh-huh. So I got to actually work with him for those, first couple months. And he was, I'm just learning. You're ringing up sales. He's like, you got to go faster. These customers, they want to, you got to be fast. And, we're trying to make money here. and then eventually, I became an assistant manager. He opened a store downtown on Sutter Street.
He was just a manager at that point?
No, he owned the business. Okay, yeah. But he would come in on Matt's days off and manage. And then eventually other people got promoted. I became an assistant manager. I became a manager, a buyer, all that stuff. And, and then he kind of like, he had like five stores at that point.
Wow.
The one he owns now that he still owns is 555 Beach Street.
Uh-huh.
And there's a giant,
room poster
of his face on the front of the building.
I've seen that. That's the building he owns.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, it's crazy that he's buying this ad space right here for a movie that does not even play near here. I mean, it's like, wow. Of course he owns it.
And so I worked with him forever. And then eventually those last couple of years, Matt had worked for him for like 25 years. Matt mm-hmm. quit. All the other managers quit. I was kind of the last one standing. And this is when he was getting involved in the film stuff because I knew he was involved, but I thought he was like investing in it or something. He would get this mail for like TPX Productions or something like that.
There were
some actors and stuff and auditions going on upstairs, but again, I thought he was I didn't know he was into acting, even though, and I still haven't seen this commercial. There is a commercial for Street Fashions that he did. Have you seen it?
No.
Where he's dressed like a Shakespearean actor, and he's coming down the stairs. It was like on Comcast local.
So the reason that he made that...
and that's in that building.
The reason that he made that commercial is, according to the book, is he has this creepy relationship with Greg Sestero where he like owns an apartment in L.A. and Greg Sestero's staying there. Like He's sort of like glommed on to this guy, Greg, and he's like offering him to stay in his apartment. But then whenever like Greg pisses him off, he'll like raise the rent and like do like weird, creepy shit. He'll just like show up.
Seems like that type of guy.
Right. So anyway, so this guy, Greg, moves to LA, gets his SAG card and has an agent and stuff. And so Tommy apparently is like, so how do you get SAG card?
Who books that?
How do you get SAG card? And so... this guy, Greg Sestero, was like, oh, you either have to have a speaking part and blah, 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 or you have to be the principal in a commercial. And so Tommy Wiseau's solution to this was he bankrolled his own commercial for his place in which he played the lead. And since he was the principal in that commercial, he basically bought himself a SAG card.
Wow. Wow. That's great.
That's clever.
It's but really smart. I heard that he's coming down the stairs. He's like, to be or not to be? That is the question. that was around the time that I stopped working. I was just like, I rode in the Mercedes. It got to the point when I was just doing everything and I was signing my own checks.
Wow.
And we drove down to the bank where we.
The bank
sat down
where he works, where he make a lot of money.
Where we did the thing where he authorized me to sign checks and all that stuff. And then I quit in 2002. And I always felt bad about that because I worked him for so many years and I only gave him 2 weeks notice. And he ended up having to close all those stores because there was nobody left to run them. And I always felt bad. And I didn't know that he was really heavily involved in all this stuff. And he was never around. I knew he was in L.A. and I didn't know what he was doing or whatever. But... I was stressed out, like really bad, and he was hard to get a hold of and all that. So anyway, I quit go to work at Barnes & Noble, which was just a few blocks away, actually. And then I don't remember what year it was. If it was 2003, 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
I was at home, and I had the TV on mute, and I'm on my computer or something, and I just looked up the screen, and I see his face, and it's a commercial for the room.
Wow.
And it's, like, available at Tower and whatever. So the next day, I went to Tower Records and bought it. It was, like, $10. And I did watch it by myself, and it was freaking disturbing. Yeah. Especially because... The sex scene is really early in the movie.
And a lot of them, there's like three in a row where they cut away and so they cut right back into it.
Well, two of them are the exact same scene. Yeah. He just reused the clips from the previous sex scene.
Yeah, the butt muscle.
Which thing. Is amazing, by the way.
And I was passing it off to people. I'm like, you know, you got to see this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. Yeah. It's just the worst thing ever. And, you know, I think I'd shown it to a couple people, and then maybe a couple... Years went by, and this guy I work with was like, gave me an Entertainment Weekly. He's like, you got to read this article about this guy. I'm like, no way. Wow. And so it was all about how he had the billboard in LA for like 5 years. Yeah. Eventually, people were like, who is this guy? And then Paul Rudd and David Cross, all these guys started having parties. And and then it just snowballed from there. And I couldn't believe, I'm like, God, you know, I always knew he kind of wanted to be famous. And I always think he kind of modeled himself after Michael Jackson a little bit. He always kind of had that ponytail look. And,
yeah.
And the some of the outfits that he's wearing in that movie with the blazer and the pocket pants, that's what he wore.
Yeah.
That's what he wore. They were
like,
the
costume designer was like, yeah, we couldn't get him to wear anything else he would show. And he has this fashion sense that's unique only to him, where it's like super baggy sport coat with like cargo pants that are just filled, like the pockets are just filled with stuff.
Yeah. Oh God, I wish I knew it was in the cargo pants pockets.
Well, at one point on the set, apparently it was filled with like lotion and like hair dye and like lip stuff.
Small birds. It's like he's raising a pigeon family.
One of the memories I have about him, and something he made us do, and this was, I was probably only 19 or 20 at this point. I'd just become like an assistant manager. He gave us a list, like pages of words, and we were supposed to look them up, write the definition for them, and write them in a sentence. And you know, full disclosure, some of these managers were Chinese and they didn't speak English or whatever. But for him to do that to us and to me, I was so insulted. But the funny part is, I wish I still had it.
Insulted, but
you know, and I should have brought homework? It. I still have my original.
Were you doing his homework?
Well, he
was it like
so we would sell stuffed animals, I guess little stuffed animals at the gift shop thing. And what he had written down was staff animals, STAFF animals, staff animals. Yeah. I was so insulted. I'm like, this guy's second language is English, and he's making me look the shit up and like write him a sentence. And he can't even staff animal. I mean, there was.
But don't you think he was just trying to make you help him learn English?
Yeah, it seems like it was like a night class assignment.
Yeah, maybe. I never thought of that.
I mean, it sounds like that. Either that or like he was.
So at the time, you thought it was like sort of a employee handbook type of thing?
Well, no, I thought he was just trying to. I think he was. It was something he knew. If he did it, he has to make all the managers do it. But I think it was for those managers that didn't speak English as well.
Okay, I get it.
Did he do shit out of spite? Like, he seems like a guy who would, because you talked about him raising the rent on
sometimes
Craig.
He was, you know, I look back, I think he was a really good, fair guy. He would get a little, I guess, spiteful sometimes in some ways, but nothing major. I mean, I was to the point with him where, because he was nuts. He'd have all these crazy ideas and ask us to do all this stuff. And we would, you know, if I didn't agree with him, I would like yell back at him on the phone, you know. But yeah, he was total control freak, you know. I always had to be his way. And even at the end, the last year I worked for him, he bought a spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted us to put it on the sidewalk right outside the store, which I'm pretty sure you probably have to get a permit for
that.
Yeah,
I think so.
And to have that on the sidewalk where little kids can walk by and look into, it seems like this big.
Right.
It's super hot too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I constantly argued with him about that. I'm like, I'm not doing it. It's too much of a risk or whatever.
The big question that it seemed like everybody on the room set had was like, how did this guy make money when he seems like incapable of understanding like very simple like human interactions and the way, like one of the stories is like they would go to, whenever he goes out to eat, he orders a glass of hot water that he doesn't drink. Huh. And like whenever the waitress asks, he just like kind of gets mad at them for asking him. Or if he's buying, he bought like one of the things that he offered Greg to be in the movie because Greg didn't want to be in it, was he offered him a car And so when he finally bought him the car.
Wait, is Greg in the movie?
Yeah.
He's, which one is he?
He's the hot one. The one who's Lisa's.
Oh, hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm very busy. What's going on?
That guy.
He's very busy.
Oh, hey, Peter.
So apparently when he went to go buy Greg his car, which he bought him an SUV so that he could carry like the equipment around for the shoot. But yeah. like the salesman would ask him for ID. And whenever he'd buy a big ticket item, like the salesman, like the people would ask him for ID, and he'd get really mad, like he would like make a big scene about not showing his identification. And so, for the car, eventually he got it to where they went to a different car lot, and he gave a cashier's check instead of a personal check, and he got it to where they would just look at the ID while it was still in his wallet without him taking it out. So he was like paranoid about giving his ID to people. So anyway, I was just wondering, like, on the set of the movie, they all had like their sort of lore about who is this guy, where did he come from, how did he make his money, like what was it like working for him for 11 years? Was there like a lot of with other people that worked for him? Was there a lot of just speculation and where you'd trade?
Oh yeah,
sort of rumors?
Constantly. We were all fascinated and about him and wondered. You know, he was mysterious and we didn't know a lot about him. There was a guy who worked for him who I kind of, you know, James Gleason?
Yeah.
So James is in a band with this guy, Jeff, and Jeff's brother, his name's Greg Herrera, was Tommy's right-hand man for years. He was like, he'd come pick up the money every day from the safe. He would bring us our paychecks. He would, you know, he was kind of like the accountant or whatever, mm-hmm. Tommy. And I think he helped him design the stores. He's totally tacky crap, but... so he's another guy.
Everybody
that worked
liked
for
cargo pants
for years, and that was a weird connection with James.
It's interesting because I've always had a tiny personal mystery around who owns the Fisherman's Wharf shops.
Mm-hmm.
Like how you get into that. I'm wondering if it's like a third tier immigrant thing where you start like a small thing and then you move on to the big fish is like having the camera store on Fisherman's Wharf. Right. Like how
interesting about it, because like. Tommy Wiseau is obviously like an insane person, and he somehow went from third world immigrant to being able to just drop $6 million on a shitty movie.
So I worked in a coats of arms store in high school, and like that's what triggered my lifelong interest in who the fuck would buy this type shit.
Yeah.
And like we weren't allowed to show them their coats of arms because then they just look and go. And so we'd like tell them about it while it's on the computer facing it opposite to them. And then like they had to buy the printout from like a laser printer.
Huh.
And like
they print it out. It's just the family crest is a bunch of dicks.
Yeah. It's three crotches on a field vert.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But like my boss was like this. She was super nice. Same sort of thing. We're super nice, but like totally crazy. Like jet black, circular hair, like an old white chick with like curly, like ultra permed hair, like where it's out straight, sort of like a black star.
Yeah.
And same sort of thing where it's just like there's these businesses that exist.
Yeah.
And to look into them is to just get like a little taste of madness.
Well, it's apparently so easy to make money that a crazy person can do it.
And they made a lot of money from not showing people their coats of arms. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, what? I need to know about this on a deep level.
Well, I don't know if it's addressed in the book or not, but from what I remember and from what Matt had told me back in the early days is that he had a partner named Eli.
Uh-huh.
And... that they were partners in the stores or whatever. And Eli died of AIDS, I believe, which also made us always speculate whether he was gay or not. I don't know. But, and then I guess that guy's sister kind of inherited the stuff and Tommy ended up buying her out basically. Uh-huh. So by the time I started working for him, it was just him. And you know, he made a lot of money.
So you say he sold Levi's. Were they like real Levi's or were they fucked up Levi's? Like,
because all these tourists would just eat that stuff up.
Really?
Yeah, they would just
buy Levi's because they were there instead of walking.
You get people who would want to buy large quantities so they could bring them back to Europe or Asia and sell them for a profit.
It's a souvenir
all
purchase.
Stuff.
But it's weird because it's like you're making money selling Levi's like fucking 10 blocks from the actual Levi's store.
Well, and I think that's part of his thing, because you guys are talking about the America. I think he really does love this country and loves capitalism and believes in it. We had these...
I would fucking believe
it. But that's probably why. Levi's is really an American thing. Converse All-Stars was a really big
thing. He's the American dream, like, in a nutshell, in a fucking crazy...
There's a beautiful combination of artificiality and just total straight-up sincerity involved.
Well, yeah.
But it's like, here, I'm living this thing, but like...
Well, it's the idea that
you trying to fake it, like in like so going for this artificial American dream, like you're actually the American dream.
No,
like, you are 100%
doing it.
That's
what he likes about it, is that you can be whatever you think that you are.
Yeah. And like, but just that commitment is like, that's actually it. Like, you fake it until you are that thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you just fake it and you are it like instantly, basically. So
I like that there's a vibration in it, the... All of these like weird artifacts, like they just sort of hum with like this fighting.
Yeah,
I've got a question. Did you ever see him drink?
No, he was. I think he was very anti-drinking and drugs. He would always, you know, be suspicious about certain. I think this guy's on drugs, you know.
Yeah, but did you ever one time see him drink?
Mm-mm.
Do you? Because like the scene in the room where he pours the scotch then they pour vodka,
pretending to be drunk,
vodka in it. Is like the most insane thing I've ever
seen. You're like, anybody who's ever drunk alcohol knows that's not how you drink alcohol.
And not only that, but anyone who really doesn't even know about it, like, would assume, well, a mixed drink is when you put two different alcohol inside the cup. And it's like, no, that's not it at all. But
it tastes good.
And that's the other thing. That line, you're right, it tastes good. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
No one would taste anything.
Ah, the old vodka scotch.
It's like, I don't drink, you know that. And it's like, and then he drinks for the first time. Yeah.
He pays a terrible price for his fall.
So, no, but then he says it tastes good. Come on, I mean, this guy obviously does not drink. At least hadn't up until that point. I think now I'm sure he drinks now.
So according
one of the stores he owned before I quit was near your house. It was on Haight Street. I think 1457 Haight Street. If I'm not.
That's where
I can't believe
lives.
I remember that. I still remember my security code 72293.
That's amazing.
Nice.
But it was right next to the pork store. Now it's like a crepe shop or something like that. It was a really small store, but that was one of the last ones that he owned.
Wow.
God damn. Okay, so first of all, the drinking thing, a lot of people think they've seen him drunk at room screening. According to Greg Sestero, he doesn't drink or do drugs, but like during the day, he'll drink like 5 or 6 Red Bulls.
Yeah.
And so like towards late at night, his body will just shut down where he's like completely not making words and just seems like he's totally wasted.
I don't think he sleeps. That's one thing I definitely remember about him is that.
I wonder he looks like a fucking vampire.
Like, I can't remember if. I just feel like he was. Yeah, something about it, I remember. I just don't think he ever slept. I think.
Did he ever come into the store in the mornings, or was it always like, was he on time?
After those first 2 months, when we had a store in Sutter Street, we had all 4 floors, and we had basically stock room on second floor. Third floor was completely empty. We just had a break room up there, and then he had his office on the fourth floor, which I don't think I ever saw that floor.
Yeah,
He had cameras all over the store, so he had all his monitors up there.
It's all lotion,
marble tigers.
But, yeah, you know, he would call down like, "What's going on?" You know.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, he would just basically it would come unannounced, or we would have a meeting. You know, he would set up a meeting,
and you never saw him with
usually unannounced.
You never saw him with a girl.
No.
So there is no Lisa. I mean, Lisa's not based on someone. Because, like, to watch the movie, you'd be like, he obviously, someone slighted him.
Yeah.
You know?
He's very, very gay.
Well, right. Well, for me, I saw it more as like a revenge.
There's a lot of, I mean, it's very latently homoerotic.
Definitely, for sure. But I saw it more as like this is a revenge movie about, like, I gave this woman everything and then I was the best when it's like, I mean, you know, you blatantly hit her twice in the movie. I mean, and, you know, like, he's like pushing her and shit like that. It's like, I did not hit you. And then immediately starts pushing her. And so I figured.
Do you understand life?
Yeah. Oh man!
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her.
He's saying this to himself.
Not. Yeah,
I did not.
Oh hi, Greg.
Oh boy! It's hard. It's hard to stay mad at someone who just says hi to everyone.
So according to the book, like he told a story about how he sort of came from somewhere to the Eastern Bloc to France, where everybody just treated him like shit.
Yeah,
and then eventually got to.
I mean, that guy had a rough childhood. You could tell.
Yeah, and then eventually got to San Francisco. And apparently, like, his first gig was, like, selling some sort of mechanical birds on the wharf. And, like, oiseau means bird in French.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, he changes, like, to a W, like, oiseau.
Well, there's a UPS driver on the wharf who's been down there for years named Pete, who remembered Tommy selling yo-yos.
Right.
Whoa.
That's that also Pete comes up in the book.
This
the
is like the best tourist lore I have ever. This is
yeah.
like
great.
Fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
To me.
It's
like, how the fuck did this guy go from yo-yo salesman?
He had a brother.
Tommy has a brother.
And when he opened some of these stores, his brother, who was older, I can't remember his damn name, but his brother spoke French and did not speak English very well at all.
Yeah.
And but his brother basically built our stock rooms and built all the shelves and all that and did carpentry stuff.
Because
mm-hmm.
I
can't remember his name.
Well, that's the thing, because Tommy came from France, from somewhere else, and definitely speaks French, but like refuses to speak French if you address him in French.
Like if I remember when I first started, if anybody ever had problems with the French and he was there and asked him to translate, he would get really pissed.
Is that why he claims Louisiana? Because he's like, I hear they
I think
speak.
So I think that
they,
you know,
they must
that,
have
that's
French
actually
accents,
from what though. I remember.
No, so. When he first came from France to the U.S.,
yeah.
apparently he had an uncle that lived that he stayed with in Chalmers, Louisiana.
Uh-huh. For how long?
I'm not sure. I can't remember.
And then, that's just so weird because, like, it's such a I guess he thinks we don't know what Louisianans sound like. I guess
like no, one I think of the most distinct dialects in all
yeah,
of America.
Right. No, I think it's an extension of. The idea that, you just say what you are here and people yeah. just take you at face value and then you can, you know, they give you money and you're like, oh, here's your Levi's, sir.
It's, wow. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
It's funny because you say that people look and think that he shows up fucked up. And that's what I thought, too, up until, you know, you said that Greg says he still doesn't drink. Because when I saw him at one of the screenings, he looked like... He looked toe up. I mean, he just was red in the eyes.
He's got like a drooping eyelid, and he's got his cheeks are like sunken in a weird way, and he's got that body that looks ripped in a way that's not healthy, but looks like he's dying. Like
yeah,
he's like
Iggy Pop. Iggy Pop. Yeah.
There were definitely some times where I remember him coming into the store not looking healthy, and I remember at one point he had red splotches and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I don't know if he has AIDS or anything. I don't want to speculate on that, but I know he has the money to buy the medication.
Interesting.
But yeah, there were times where I definitely thought that he was not healthy.
Wow.
And then, you know, 6 months later, he looked fine. You know,
yeah.
Wow. That So did you ever see him work out? Was he?
Me and Matt one time, the other manager, there was a hotel on Sutter Street that used to have a pool that you go and pay $5 and go swimming. And we both saw him there once. I think he was taking swimming lessons and he had a swimming,
swimming cap.
He had a cap
protect
on,
my
yeah.
hair.
And Speedos, from what I remember.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Other than that, yeah, I don't know. I'm he was always in good shape though. So
there wasn't this oddly sort of thing where everybody's like, "What the fuck is this guy's deal?" And you weren't always like trying to figure out.
Oh, all of us. Yeah, we're fascinated by him, and employees. There was even times where employees were like, "He doesn't even exist. You guys are." Because they would be like, "Oh, I keep hearing Tommy said this. Thomas said
look,
that."
Look, if the toe comes up short, you're gonna have to answer to Tommy. It's like
Tommy's not real.
There's no Tommy.
Were there any times where you thought Tommy maybe didn't exist and that he was a figment of your imagination?
No.
Because he seems like an imaginary person.
He's such a character.
Yeah.
Such a character.
So according to the book where the football thing, like he went to throw a football with Greg Sestero and just, you know, had never, looked like he'd never even seen a football, but... Greg Sestero claims they were like at the park somewhere where there was like Olympic rings or something, and he just got up on them and like completely paralleled out and like flipped himself over. You know how in gymnasts
like
where you can flip yourself over without letting go of the bars, and that apparently like he's just like got a crazy like hand strength, and so he thinks he must have been some sort of gymnast or something, but
Soviet gym project,
but doesn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. That guy I was telling you about, Greg, who was like his accountant guy, who knows James, that's what he actually did. He was like a gymnast guy who did all that stuff.
And yeah.
Apparently like some crazy, yeah. So maybe they both did that.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. We are putting together a piece of a puzzle.
So
that
it's
I don't
such a weird
know.
Puzzle. It's like, all right, so he's from the Eastern Bloc, came through France, came through Louisiana, sold yo-yos at one point and some sort of mechanical birds, and then somewhere between yo-yos and mechanical birds.
What kind of mechanical birds do you think? Because I could go for a mechanical bird.
I want
nothing.
Know.
Nothing tacky.
I'm
though.
Picturing the falcon from Your Highness.
Yeah.
The mechanical falcon.
Yeah.
How do people not like them?
The mechanical owl from Clash of the Titans.
I'm just thinking about one of those balance birds that just it balances just on its beak and you can just put it on the edge of your desk. And go, how is it staying there?
I don't know what that is, but I need that in my life. Does it grant wishes?
It's just you put your beak there and the rest of the
does
body.
It have any future telling properties?
Well, I mean, no, but it could. I don't know. It balances. The future is it will balance.
Yeah, okay.
It knows that much.
I'll settle for that.
Yeah. Did you ever buy one of his birds?
No. God, and the stuff we used to sell, man. We had, for a while, I wish I would have bought a pair of these. I think they were still, you know, we had a lot of crappy stock that was just sitting there for years. But when I first started working there, he had a lot of back stock of, and even later, it was like one of those things where he closed the store and we had to just get all this crap out. And there was L.A. Michael Jackson had his own L.A. gear. Yeah. Bad. We had some of those.
Man.
With the bedazzled with everything. I wish I would have bought some of those. They're probably worth a lot of money now.
The L.A. gear, they were like tassels. They had kind of like tassels on the side type shit.
They were black and they had a lot of, like, I think, Velcro Indian straps. Warrior. And they had like silver metal studs on them all over them.
So retail for tourists is definitely the business to get into.
And he owned that building on Sutter Street, and I'm sure sold that for a profit. And
a bunch of shirts about boobs and hey Saddam, what's being dead like, you fucking piece of shit. Yeah.
That store on the wharf is like a spy shop now. And
do you ever see him do anything violent? Was he ever violent or raise his voice in a way?
Oh, yeah. He definitely raised his voice.
But in a way that made you feel like he's going to hit somebody?
No.
Because he seems like filled with rage, you know? And like, that's like...
You are tearing me apart!
No, that's just good acting.
Because I could totally see it, the rage, you know, and
it's possible, you know, but I mean, yeah, he would raise his voice. He was, I mean, one of the things he would just say all the time is like, I just don't get it.
Yeah, not surprised.
Yeah.
How dare you talk to me like that?
Is that what he sounded like when he was yelling, or was it?
Yeah.
So maybe he's not a bad actor. Maybe that's just natural to him.
Yeah. I only get 50s sitcom violence out of him.
Yeah.
It's like he'll raise his hand, but it's not really coming down because they'll cut to commercial.
Right. Oh, man.
And I've had some of my old coworkers have had spottings of him. One of my old coworkers goes and has met him at some of his screenings or whatever.
And when's the last time you've seen him?
I haven't seen him since I quit.
All right, so okay,
12 years.
So we have to go see him together.
Yeah,
I would. Wait, like, so does he own the room and its cult status? Is he?
Yeah.
Is he going to room?
I think 100%. Yeah,
so he'll just show up at you.
He
if you have a theater up, and you play it.
He shows
he'll
up
be
to
there.
The one in L.A. and then he does tours.
I'm curious, isn't there someone out there who like sees him as being marketable and just saying, "Here, just take the money. Do you have complete creative control? This is what we want from you." You
know? I mean, film a doc to go with it. You do the movie and the companion doc and make a fucking killing.
Oh yeah,
well, but you have a TV show coming out or something.
Yeah, they say because like he did a
Neighbors
a commercial
like
for a thing that
Neighbors,
wasn't made called The Neighbors that looked of course terrible. But it also the problem is it's see the great thing about The Room is that it's a drama. And it's not trying to be funny. And at the parts where it tries to be funny, you know, it fails miserably.
Comedy.
Right. And, but they market it as a black comedy because apparently people saw it and could not stop laughing. And so he said, oh, I guess this is a comedy then.
That's all him. That's all his marketing. And even on the DVD, there's something, some sort of symbol that kind of looks like a Sundance, you know, like.
Oh, yeah.
He's got some laurels on there that he drew.
Dude,
Fisherman's Wharf Film Festival right. official selection.
And maybe
the laurels are kelp.
Maybe people have tried to give him money, you know, to make a movie. But you know, he's obviously.
I don't think he trusts anybody.
I don't think so. I mean, that's an incredibly wealthy man.
Yeah, the interesting thing about you working for him is that if you read the book, he just sounds completely unemployable and like a complete like wild card in any social situation where you're like, how do you trust him to do anything?
When he's got all that hot water.
Yeah.
Just sitting there.
What a weird symbol that is. Yeah. Like, I want to have a cup of hot water, but I want to watch it get warm.
Just waiting for it to be lukewarm by the time you leave. I could make tea, but I won't.
Yeah, I don't need it.
We used to get commission checks separate from our paychecks. And he used to, every single one had a little paper stapled on it. And they said, the more you sell, the more you earn. Money for you, but up to you.
Nice. It's like,
he's got all these weird, like, broken like English little phrases. Like, did he have any other, like, good broken English little phrases? Because he seems really good at coming up with his own little phrases that aren't quite grammatical, but.
Yeah, I mean, he would you know, sometimes call when something new was happening or they were fixing something, and he'd be like, how do you like this? We designed this ourselves. You know, I designed this myself, you know?
Yeah.
I would take a million of him over every Hollywood film. Actually, does he say that
when he's talking about the cameras? You know, we actually design it this way.
Probably.
We shoot, you know.
Well, yeah. they actually did build like a specific like special rig to hold
both the cameras
because like that had never been done before because why would you ever
because
do
that's
that
a anymore? Terrible idea.
Oh, it's so
most
good.
People don't waste that money. Yeah, they go good. Like, no, just pick a format.
This is a terrible idea. He's like, yeah, but we're gonna execute it perfectly.
and it's great because some of it, like, the shit is just out of focus and you're like, well, there's the film. And then there is the digital.
So has he made his money back? Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, he has to have at this point, right? Because it's like a huge thing now.
You'd think so. But then again,
he seems so bad at like turning down deals because he thinks he's too big for him or something, you know?
All right. I mean, I saw it at the Red Vic once or twice.
Yeah.
And he wasn't at any of them.
They play it at the theater on Fillmore.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's where I saw Saturday. It here. Here yeah. I saw it.
Saturday?
Yeah, or every other Saturday.
Oh,
I think.
Really? They still do it.
Yeah. Is this a scene that I'm missing out on? Is there
it's like the Rocky Horror Picture Show? It's like the Rocky Horror Picture
Show. People yell stuff out. People throw spoons, I believe it is. People bring the footballs. Uh-huh.
It's funny because when I went to it, I'd already invented a lot of my own things to watch a movie when I would watch it with people. And then when I saw it with a group of people, not props, like the spoon thing, I didn't understand. I was like, why are they throwing spoons? Yeah. Like, oh, because there's a framed picture of a spoon.
I saw the movie like 7 times. I never saw the freaking spoon.
No, I never saw the spoon and didn't notice it until people were throwing spoons in the theater.
What's an example of a thing you would do, like jump out at the last minute? You're like,
what do you mean?
Like, what you said you had things that you would do introduce a person to the movie.
Yeah, one of them.
Like it's an initiation ceremony.
There was a scene. So the scene where where the two new characters are introduced
and abruptly and without context.
And then the underwear thing happens and whatnot. I would tell the person, okay, just remember this scene. It's very important. It's very important. Remember this scene. Remember this scene. And then when, you know, a few scenes later, when he recounts the story of that scene, I would say to the person, do you remember that scene? And they go, yeah. And I go like, yeah, that's it. Like, that's the whole scene is remember that previous scene.
Your diligence has been rewarded.
And then one of the things I would say.
My underwears.
There was something.
He says me underwears for some reason.
Me underwears.
It's the weirdest shit ever.
Well, by the way, I love that line because you know he was like, oh, that's hilarious. Say that in the movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a lot of things. Also, XYZ. Examine your zipper. There's a lot of idioms that no one would ever use in a movie because they're lame and children say them. And he was like, no, that's funny. XYZ? I say that. Yeah. Then when I went and saw the movie, all these people had all these things to say. And I was like, I felt like I had found my brethren. I was like,
did any of them match up? Did you have like a sink where you're like, I drew that too?
Yeah, one of them did. When she said, I have him wrapped around my little finger, I would go like, I would make a joke about like, not so little, you know, like talking to, you know, a fat joke. And people in the theater went, little. And I was like, oh, that's my joke. Yeah. And
I am at peace.
I
just like to watch you guys.
Oh, so wait, what happens with him? Because he's like the creepy little pervert child that wants to watch him fuck.
Does he
watch them fuck at some point?
Yeah, the end is him just watching everyone fuck.
Straighten her that dress.
Stop ganging up on me.
Yeah, you got to finish the
movie.
He totally
looks like it's that kid on the Big Bang Theory now, but from Roseanne.
Yeah. Well, it's terrifying because he's older than like everybody else in the cast except for Tommy, but they like dressed
really?
Him like, yeah, he was like 26. The Greg was like 20 when they made the movie. Wow. The other chick was like 22. And yeah, then they dress him like
there's a
surreal, man child.
Yeah. I couldn't figure out if he was pretending to be like a 12-year-old.
I feel the worst for Lisa.
You're not my fucking mother.
I feel like Lisa really got the short end of the stick because number one, she had to like fake fuck Tommy Wiseau, and also she seems like to be the only person who doesn't want to publicly face the fact that she was in the movie because like Greg does it, Denny has done it.
Yeah, none of them are naked in it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at some point, you just kind of go like, yeah, I was in one of the worst movies ever.
What do you mean? Like, what do you mean doesn't want to publicly face
well,
it?
Well, you never see her at, she doesn't go to screenings. She doesn't make an internet video about how she was in the movie. You know, she doesn't, you don't see them talk like.
Greg didn't get titty fucked by Tommy.
No, but I mean, but there's nothing to really be. They all share an equal amount of shame for being in the movie,
right?
But it's I'd feel more comfortable if she would like. But the problem is because the people in the movie when they're shouting out shit, they're so blatantly making fun of her, like her weight and the way she looks and how she's,
which is lame because I found her breasts oddly compelling.
Oh, they were great breasts.
I didn't
enjoy
nice
the
nipples.
The face she was making through most of it though. She was making a very strange face.
Face would you make if you were in
her whole
situation?
Face? Her face was I just ate a raw oyster.
Yeah, yes, it was that she found something unpleasant.
I found that her friend in the movie was really attractive.
Oh, yeah. She was Michelle. You mean,
is that her name?
Yeah, that's her name. That's the character's name. I love that. Oh man, it is so many. There's just so every scene has something to offer. Every scene of the movie, even
in
the ones
a few minutes, bitch.
Even the ones that are just repeated scenes. Oh, I just love the movie so much. You know, it's weird. My love for this movie is on this level of like, if you are laughing at this movie, then you understand life. And so I've shown it to the past three girlfriends that I've had.
Oh, it's a crucible. You're hardening them in the fires of your passion.
It's like a litmus test for like, will you like me? How much will you like me? And if they really, really enjoy it, then I will be in a relationship.
Or they'll be consumed by the flames of Tommy Wiseau.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, they need to get it. It's kind of like a...
How's that worked out?
It's worked great. Like, my current girlfriend, Roxanne, when she saw it, she was dying. And I was like, yes, she gets it. And, like, she got it on this level of, like, you know, laughing at the ridiculousness of how ripped he is for no reason, you know. And
like I said, it's creepy ripped. It's like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's things that are being sucked out of his body ripped.
Yeah, right. I mean, it looks fake. I mean, it looks like it's all this muscle, but all this loose skin. And it just, he looks like he's wearing an Edgar suit, like from fucking Men in Black, you know?
I think he kind of looks like Christopher Walken a little bit, too, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
It's just, I don't know. For me, it's just one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. I'm obsessed.
It's probably been at least a year since I've seen it. But,
I can't believe
I've probably seen it between 10 and 15 times.
I can't believe you haven't run into. I mean, of course,
I can't believe you haven't written a book about working for Tommy.
Well,
yeah,
it's just like I don't, you know.
At some point,
I know that much about.
You're
him,
going
you know,
to
but,
be contacted by an investigative journalist at some point who needs to know because, like, I feel like I need to know.
There's an infinite thirst for knowledge about this man.
Yeah, he's a mystery. Sure, he is an enigma.
I.
Oh man!
And we still don't know where he's officially from.
Mm-hmm.
How old he is?
I never even knew where he lived when I worked for him. If he lived in the city or if he lived
on Guerrero Street, according to the book.
Okay.
Other than that,
that
I think that just the idea that he ran a business is sort of
multiple
baffling
businesses.
The idea that he made money. See, I've been convinced for a long time that he just came from money and that he's just been a very, very rich kid.
Yeah, he was
kid.
Like a mob heir or something.
Or
like
just like heir to something huge. And that's why it's all a big secret.
Could
you know?
Be, yeah, it could be.
It could be. But I mean, you talk about him selling birds on the
yo-yos,
street.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like.
Doesn't add up.
It doesn't add up. I don't understand it. Like he you know. He has this air to him of like aimless rich kid who decided one day to make a vanity movie. But then you tell me that he sold yo-yos and mechanical birds. And I'm just like, who is this fucking guy? I mean, is there more than one of him?
Maybe that's the secret. If you're just mysterious enough, people always want to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you just have like a weird accent. Never tell people where you live, where you're from, how old you are.
Yeah. It's lie. Like you just gotta lie. Yeah.
It's like the prestige. Like he's kept this whole thing going yeah. for this long, and it's just like this is all just a giant, drawn out magic trick that at some point he's gonna let us see the room filled with the drowned Tommy Wiseaus. You know?
Oh God, I hope he never shows us that room. That's when it gets really sad.
I mean, maybe, but I would like
I, yeah. I hope they
I need
never
to
conclude.
Know.
Yeah,
I just found the best sound drop.
Yeah.
I got the results of the test back. I definitely have breast cancer.
No one has been so happy.
You saw that scene, right?
Yeah, but what's like the line before that? Isn't like the line before that had nothing to do with that line?
Yeah, they were, yeah. She was talking
what
about how he's a banker.
Yeah. Oh, I like that she's mad that Tommy won't give her friend money to buy a house.
Mm-hmm. But also, the line after that is like, don't worry, Mom, they're curing people every day. And then she goes, I'm sure I'll be fine. I'm sure. I mean, I've never been more sure of anything in my life.
Anyway, back to Johnny.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. Like, every... It's just nothing... You'd figure the actors would just be like, listen, Tommy, I don't want to question your vision, but this makes no sense. As an actress, what is
what
my
I'm
motivation
like,
for...
How much pushback did he
apparently
get
there was a
people?
Lot of pushback, and he just refused... Like, he just powered yeah. through all of it. Mm-hmm. Like, there was...
Good for him.
Just at like, every level.
Yeah, I can totally see that, too.
Good for
I
mean, him.
He always... You know, he had his crazy visions, and he found ways to make it happen.
And, you know, for better or for worse, he was right. He was not yeah. wrong. Yeah. Any meddling in...
It, yeah, halfway, and this would have disappeared. Forever.
Easily.
It just be like into
yeah,
the void.
Some bad movie, yeah. yeah. I mean...
He committed and succeeded in a weird reversal.
Worth every dollar.
He judo flipped everyone's expectations of what a movie should be.
Worth every freaking cent. Like, it's...
Why?
So you came... You moved... In 91, was that from Massachusetts that you're coming from?
My dad moved here in 85, so I started coming out. My dad lived right around the corner, Polk and Filbert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I started coming out here in 86 was the first summer I came out and fell in love with it. And 2 months after I graduated high school, moved out here. Been here ever since.
And you were like, hell, I'm going to work for this dude. And it's going to be
11 years. You know, and there is this part of me that's like happy for him, really. You yeah. know, it's like. Because, like I said, he was a pretty good guy, and he you know he paid me well.
Yeah, I guess there's something nice about it because like you can't it's hard to feel any.
He sent me to Hawaii. He had this policy wow. for a while where he's like anybody who's worked here for 5 years full time, I will send you to Hawaii.
For how long?
A week.
Wow,
he paid
that's
for the
cool.
he paid for the I brought that's a friend. He paid for the hotel and the airfare.
Wow. So what happened after 10 years? Did you go to Hawaii again?
No, I didn't actually. No,
you should meet up with him just so you can go to Hawaii. Be like, yeah. Listen, dude, you owe me a trip.
Well, he used to say stuff too. Have you ever tried paragliding and all this? I'm like, what? So yeah, I think he's done all this crazy stuff like that and adventure.
Maybe
just was it a weird thing where it was like you could do really cool stuff, but then you'd be hanging out with Tommy. So it was kind of like a.
Oh no, he didn't go. No, he no. wasn't there. No.
That's good.
Oh God, that would have been weird.
He didn't try to hang out with people from the. From
no,
the start,
never. Yeah. He was so like you know he would give us money every year to have a Christmas party somewhere, but he would never show up to those things.
Interesting.
What about a surprise party? Did he ever throw a surprise party for anyone?
No, not that I know of.
God, because yeah. that to me is the saddest part of the movie. You'll see at the very close to the end of the movie, there's a surprise party that's thrown for him.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And it's just so sad because it's like. He threw himself a surprise party for his movie because no one has ever thrown
well,
him.
That's the thing. Like the movie and then the book, they sort of paint him as this guy who's sort of lonely and never really has friends. But from what it sounds like, he sort of had the option. I mean, he had a bunch of people working for him. It's not like he didn't have contact with people.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, but who wants to get close to that? You know, there's this guy, Eli, who died of AIDS, and that's about it. That's what it sounds like.
Well, and I know that guy, Greg, though, the guy who was the accountant guy, was really close to Thomas. And Greg's whole Greg had a family, and they would all come in sometimes. So I know he was close to that family.
And what was Greg like?
Was he
straight?
I think he was gay.
There's something going on here.
I mean, Greg
pulling these threads, man.
Greg Sestero definitely paints it like Tommy almost certainly had a sort of gay thing for him, but it was kind of like he couldn't tell if it was like an attraction or if it was like a wanting to be him.
Man. It's probably a bit of both.
Sounds like an actor's take on pretty much every interaction with another human. I don't know if he's gay for me, if he just wants to live inside my body, but I've been working out, so either way, it's cool with me.
Leave your stupid comments in your pocket.
Oh, perfect.
Well.
Man.
Yeah.
I feel like anyone who would have bitter feelings towards him for you know, having success can easily just feel like, well, you know, his success is based on it being the worst thing that's ever been made.
But the fact that he was successful before the movie, it's kind of like, well, fuck it, who cares what it
is? Right. No. I'm just saying, like, you know.
Basically, he's a guy who's accidentally lucked into incredible success in his life.
Which is really one of the two ways that you can luck in, or you can get into success. You can either luck into it, or you can hurt people.
Yeah.
It's just incredible, man. Because, like, he found a way... how many people have made a vanity picture that's bad and you just throw it out?
Because there's a lot of different types of bad, and usually most bad is just boring.
Right.
It has to be so on another level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on this whole other level where it's just so riveting. Every freaking...
I need him to exist. He's my Batman.
Yeah. Oh.
I need the movie questionable, but I need his legacy. Yeah. The mythology around this person to continue.
I definitely recommend reading the book, especially as an audiobook, because Greg Sestero does an incredible... he does all the impressions of Tommy's lines, like, just dead on.
That's great, because, like, to read it, like, the pages that I read, whenever he would do... he would write out phonetically the way Tommy spoke, and I was dying. I was like, this is exactly how he would say these words.
Does he ever do this, the hang loose sign in the movie?
I love you, darling.
Apparently, so... I don't remember him doing it in the movie, but according to the book, like when he went up on stage and introduced it at the premiere, he's like, anyway, be cool. And he did like the hang loose.
That's what he would do every time he walked into our store. He would do that. Hi, how you doing?
He learned that in Hawaii. That's why he sent you there.
Yeah.
Hang loose. Like my skin.
He used to say, he used to come in and he would
like
see.
Like the skin off my cheekbone.
He would see like a new employee that he had never met before, and he would go up to him and be like, hi, how you doing? You like working here? We have great benefits. He goes, just smile. Be yourself.
Is this a man he would talk to, or a woman?
Women or men, yeah.
Okay, so
mostly women, probably. Like,
shut
just
up
smile.
That
be
mouth.
Yourself.
Shut up that mouth, yeah. Dude. That's I've never really seriously considered him to be homosexual, but now that I like all this has come to light, I'm just like maybe. And
maybe he had a weird relationship with a gym. Some sort of gymnastics mentor.
Yeah. Or maybe he's asexual.
Yeah. I could see that.
Confused. We did have a couple good interview clips I wanted to get to this week. Oh, and you got Down with the Thinkness, but not yet.
Okay.
First couple interviews.
This is you as an all-American and a big opportunity for you in Hollywood.
This is Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey talking about his new movie.
Oh, the guy who played Matthew?
Yeah, yeah.
Beat off a lot of big opportunity for you in Hollywood. You must have had to beat off a lot of American men to get this part. Why does that make you giggle? Did you not have to beat them off?
To get the role, there was quite a few men up for the role as well. There were.
And compose yourself.
That's great.
It's adorable. It's even better because it's British.
She tells them to compose themselves. Like, it's not totally her fault.
Yeah, no, that's on her. She doesn't know about beating off.
She did it twice. Yeah. She didn't rephrase for the second round.
She doubled down on it.
Man.
That's good. And then the next one is Mike Tyson from Toronto recently, who apparently has been hanging out with Rob Ford. And I tried to convince everybody in Toronto that I know that they should definitely re-elect Rob Ford because fuck, man.
Yeah.
Best thing that's like ever happened to the comedy world, that guy.
Yeah.
He is a terrifyingly shaped human being. Like, if I could imagine the scariest shape
right.
to put a person into, he's like the Baron from Dune. You know, he's, the one that floats around.
He just makes me imagine what a person would look like if they just they existed entirely on donuts, cocaine, and alcohol.
Like his skin color is frightening, but his like this hair shape, like what's going on with his whatever's going on with that?
Yeah.
Oh,
Rob Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Begin. Now, some of your critics would say, you know, there's a race for mayor. We know you're a convicted rapist. This could hurt his campaign. How would you respond to that?
Hey, I don't know who said that. You're the only one I heard say that. You know what I mean? And
I love his answer because it's kind of all we always talk about with the real sports where they're like, that's what the journalist's way of passing things off.
People are saying.
You know, a lot of people say like, oh, this guy doesn't have legs. He's got no business playing basketball. Like, hey, you don't have legs. Like, what? Well, get that cripple guy off the court. Like, what do you say to those people? And you're like, do people really say that? Or I think you just kind of said that.
Yeah, right. I've actually never heard that before, Bob. So, yeah.
And that's how you respond.
Hey, I don't know who said that. You're the only one I heard say that. You know what I mean? And I don't have no comment to that, you know, because it's negative and you're being negative. And I met the mayor, right? And nothing they can do about it.
We actually had a really good time. We talked about George Travallo, who was a legend in your city, great man, with whom Mike spent quite a bit of time yesterday talking about his life, you know, highs and lows.
It's so interesting because you come across like a nice guy, but you're really a piece of shit.
There it is. That was awesome.
This guy's got to be shitting his pants right now.
Yeah.
Come on, that was a piece of fuck you. That was a piece of shit. You know, we're doing live TV.
Hey, I don't care. What are you gonna do about it?
All right, you gotta. Whoa,
shit.
You know, a lot of people are
where it comes raw and it's the real truth.
Yeah, a lot of people are gonna be there to see your show. Just tell us a bit about it.
It speaks for itself. Everyone saw the show.
All right, it's a Broadway production. It went to Vegas. It went to actually 28 cities in the United States. And we're really, really proud to bring it here. And we're actually going to Monaco on October 9th. We're going to be in Monte Carlo.
Right. Is it nerve-wracking for you to do something like this, or is it more nervous for you to box? How does it compare?
That's projecting right there.
It's more nerve-wracking for me to hear us talking to a rat piece of shit like you.
Yes.
You're a piece of shit.
All right.
You really have to
we're gonna wrap up this interview. Thank you for coming in.
Fuck you.
That was great. That's my favorite part. It's a great freeze frame right there too. It's just basically just like I'm about to die.
We're gonna wrap up this interview. Thank you for coming in.
Fuck you.
Was he basically saying like you're saying he's hanging out with Rob Ford? And the fact that there's a rape that he's been convicted of rape and it's going to hurt Rob Ford's reputation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was
what he was proposing.
Like
Rob Ford would be somehow brought to a lower level of standing by being around Mike Tyson.
But Mike Tyson has been convicted of raping somebody.
Yeah, he's a rapist.
Yeah, like are you not allowed to ask him about it? He's been convicted of rape. Like you kind of have to expect to be asked about it once in a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me that no one has asked him about it on live TV ever. Like that actually takes balls to be like, so you're a rapist.
Yeah. When it comes down to it, what the fuck are you gonna do?
Yeah. What?
I could probably run, but I don't know if I can get over this couch in time before he gets me.
Yeah. I'm gonna bleed on him. He probably wouldn't like that.
Jesus Christ.
No, but some of the comments on this post are like, credit to Tyson for not pimp slapping that dude into next week on live TV. Lucky he just got cussed at. And you're kind of like, I mean, I get that I wouldn't ask him about that, but that's not because I'm a good person. It's because I'm a coward and I don't want to ask him about that.
Also, you don't have a TV show.
Oh, yeah, lots of reasons. Yeah. It's like he is a convicted rapist. Like, can you not fucking bring it up? Like,
you have to put it on someone. You have to put it on your business card.
Actually, no, I think that's, I mean, he is a convicted rapist, but it's, I see where Tyson is coming from in that it was not, really relevant, and it seemed like he was reaching for a reason to call him a convicted rapist on television.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Okay.
And so,
at the same time,
at the same time, he ain't lying.
No, he's not.
But
lying.
He also served his time. I don't know how I feel about.
Well, no, I mean, once he's a convicted rapist, yes. He's a rapist, and he
went to prison for it.
Yeah, although he's a rapist, but he still stands by, according to his book, that he never raped that.
He said, "I should have raped her."
Yeah.
That's what he says.
Yeah, that I think if you say you should have raped her, then you are kind of a rapist on some level.
Yeah.
If you're like, man, in hindsight, I would rape her, then maybe you don't get the benefit of that.
But it's interesting. It's like the one thing that he admits to doing a lot of fucked up shit, but he's like living that lie forever. Like, that's one of those things I think he's never going to admit to himself that actually happened. And so maybe to bring that up is just like, dude, I have one thing that I am never going to, like, it's like, you know, he's
never
going to
live down.
He's
ever.
Never going to live it down. And, you know, cause like everything else he talks about openly about being a piece of garbage, basically, you know, and he calls himself a piece of shit and all this for all the things he's done. But that's
I
the
bet
one thing.
If you pressed him on it, he'd be like, oh yeah, I raped some people, but just not her.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. You don't want to go digging in that desert.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I think the one thing we can all agree on is that we are all scared of Mike Tyson.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'm scared to talk shit on him right now.
Yeah, like, I am genuinely afraid it will come to my house. Yeah.
I wouldn't ask him that question, that's for sure.
I wouldn't ask him any questions. I'd just go away. I'd be like, talk show over. I canceled my talk show. I'm out.
No, he seems now like a
just wash your hands of it like a dealer.
He seems like now like the type of guy.
See you later.
I would. I'd talk to him now. I'd interview the fuck out of him. I just would not bring up.
Well, yeah, I'd interview him, but I'd be like, Mike, what's going on? God, you look so good right
now.
The
weather's pretty good.
I feel like I could talk to him about sobriety, and we'd have we'd be able to like talk on that level.
Oh, but then you'd be bonding with Mike Tyson.
I wouldn't mind bonding with Mike Tyson.
You know how you raped a girl? I raped my veins with heroin. Yeah.
They didn't want it, but I gave it to them anyway. Jesus, that's dark. But yeah, I don't know. I'd want to talk to him about. I mean,
yeah,
about
it's
stuff.
Interesting territory, but
I mean, I just would completely avoid the rape thing.
Yeah, but then you're complicit.
Is that being complicit to just talk to? I mean, are we supposed to? Are you supposed to ostracize the rapist?
I mean,
for
I
the
think
rest
when a guy
life?
Rapes maybe. Someone, you are supposed to bring.
Yeah,
it up.
I think you gotta like. I think the least he can do is suffer for it eternally.
Yeah, like, well, he's kind of gotta be shamed for that.
No,
because he's not in prison anymore.
No, definitely. I agree that he needs to feel that every day for
eternal
the rest of his
social
life.
Shame seems like a reasonable.
I completely agree. I'm just saying, like, is that the responsibility of anyone who spends any time with him to be like, hey, by the way, before we have this lovely dinner here at this House of Prime Rib, you're a rapist and you're never going to live that down.
Yeah.
Would you like some bread pudding?
Yeah. we'll do horseradish, but only on request.
And only
also
on request.
You're a rapist.
Also, you're a rapist. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know. Like, if you found yourself spending like an extended amount of time with him, would you feel the need to like, oh, if I don't bring this up, I'm complicit?
No, but I mean, if you're a reporter and you're in a talk show.
Oh,
especially a Canadian
also
talk
because,
show.
Okay, so here's what he's doing on the talk show. He's going to promote this thing that he's going to promote himself.
Is the play about rape?
No, it's not about rape. It's just about his life. It's like a one-man show. So he's going there to promote something. So your job as a reporter is like, you're not getting paid for this, but you're basically supposed to sit there and just like fluff up. Basically, do free advertising for him.
Right,
so
sure.
If you don't get at least one jab in about like, hey, remember you also raped somebody.
Yeah, but he's like the last person like, I would want to jab. Like, you know, like he's, oh man.
Well, credit to that guy.
No, yeah, credit to him for having the balls to just call him a rapist. But there's part of me that does feel like that Mike Tyson handled it. Probably exactly the way that
was to be expected. The most you can give Mike Tyson in that situation.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there he goes, Mike Tyson again.
Yeah.
I want to hear what happened after the cameras went off.
Yeah.
I bet he just got up and walked away.
I'm surprised he didn't get up and walk away right then.
I bet he fucked that guy till he loved him.
Yeah.
That's because that's what Mike
and
Tyson
And then ate
does.
His children.
Yeah.
Praise Allah.
Be to Allah.
Fuck you till you love me, faggot.
Oh, man.
He is
interesting though,
I mean
man.
to be honest, in the darkest way if he hadn't raped somebody, like, I would be totally stoked with that interview because that is like he perfectly called the guy out on that kind of question where he said I haven't heard anybody saying that. I hear you saying that, piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, all right, that's, yeah, that's probably what the, yeah, that's probably what the, like, legless gymnast on Real Sports should
wanted
have said
to say, but no one's scared of them because they don't, yeah, have legs. Or so I've heard. People, yeah, have been saying that.
Okay.
No, Tyson is fascinating. He's fascinating in a Tommy Wiseau type of way. If Tommy Wiseau had,
totally different.
No.
Do you think Mike Tyson totally could fuck Tommy Wiseau until he loved him?
Well, I mean, I don't know about love. I don't know if Tommy Wiseau is capable of
those. Those are like opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah,
they wrap around. It's like socialism and fascism. They where, right, they meet in the middle.
No, but like, mm-hmm, but that's the thing. Like, Mike Tyson confuses me. And is also kind of like a puzzle just because of the way, yeah, he is evolved in the last few years.
Similar symptoms, different diseases.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. But
where he seems like such a sweetheart of a dude.
And not so much a sweetheart, but someone who is just so brutally honest and vulnerable now. Like where he is, like he...
Accurately self-reflective.
They're both making it happen. It's like one of them lucked into it and one of them hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true.
Two ways to success.
Yeah, yeah. Ah,
yeah, call back.
Oh, so did you want to go with your weekly piece?
If you've got the soundboard ready, play that.
God, really?
Sorry, I had the Tommy Wiseau.
You gave it the
sound.
Name.
You could just Tommy do
Wiseau.
It with your voice.
Yeah.
What?
No, that was not good.
That's
pretty good. There you go.
Yeah.
Down with the thickness. I wanted to do an iWatch piece because, mm-hmm, I feel like there's probably going to be no think pieces about iWatches.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, because it's... So everyone got sad watching that, right? Did you guys watch that?
Oh, no.
Oh, so I watched it because I have to...
I don't watch anything tech. I refuse.
I have to keep up with it because I'm tangentially related to what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And holy shit, it's just like the slow realization that you don't fucking matter anymore. Like that's what... Yeah. And what's the worst part about it is seeing...
Because they're like promoting a product that has no relation to anything that you care about, or...
It's pretty much on every level you could think of. If you can suggest three more things about why this might relate to you not mattering anymore, they'd all be true.
Okay.
And the worst part is that the people pitching
Give me a hint at one.
It's got a tracker for your heartbeat on it.
Okay. Right.
So it's watching you die. All right.
Okay.
It's only for rich people that have an iPhone already in their pocket.
Right.
Like it doesn't work outside of the iPhone. So now you need two things that you don't need in the first place.
Yeah.
So the worst part about it is that the people pitching it have long ago realized how unimportant they are to this larger sort of driving force that is technology fucking consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just up there and they're like, I don't know, we built some stuff and we're sorry in hindsight. And it's like they're fighting back tears and then they have to go through this fucking corpse dance with Jobs and they're like puppeteering him and they're like, and this is what he would do in this situation. And everyone claps because they're like, he would have done that, but he's dead now. And the worst part of it is that like, I don't think people realize why they're sad. And this is the crux of this down with the thinkness is that I think I realize why they're sad. It's that if we get machines to replace all the parts that we're efficient in, the machines are going to still be doing the dumb shit we were doing inefficiently.
Mm.
And so like you can get to your appointments on time, but your appointments were meaningless and dumb to begin with.
That's so nihilistic.
And so like they have this thing where you can now swipe your watch on a fucking credit card thing because credit card pulling out is so hard and you'll spill your Cheetos. Oh, you'll burn yourself because pouring water is hard. And oh my God, we live in a time of such burdens.
Yeah.
And for the love of God, like you're still buying a fucking latte and the robot is going to figure out that it can do it without you at some point. And instead of fucking Skynet murdering people, which we're also good at, but
they're
not
just going to go around buying lattes.
They're just going to go around buying dumb shit and pouring them out so they can get back in line. That's the fucking Terminator future that no one wants to admit to, is that you have imprinted all of these beautiful machines that are so good at doing their jobs with the stupidest jobs imaginable.
That's kind of like the Patton Oswalt bit about the cash checkout, the grocery store checkout robot where he's like hanging out with the other robots. And it's like, what do you do? It's like, oh, I murder people from 2,000 feet. What do? I know how much grapefruits cost.
Oh, This has been Down With The Thingness.
Okay. We got a lot of voicemails this week. I don't know if I should listen to them all.
You got to scan those because sometimes I they're this like, one. You know what I don't like? The Chinese.
I scanned this one. I don't remember what it's about, but I started, so it couldn't have been that bad.
I gave up. I got tired.
Hey, Vince and Film Junk people. This is Wes, longtime listener, owner of both the green and the red t-shirts. Anyway, just curious to hear what your favorite movies of the year are.
Favorite movies of the year.
Anyway, mine would have to be, so far, I think, Coherence and The One I Love. Curious to hear what your picks are for the year so far.
I've heard very good things about Coherence. I think as soon as it comes to streaming, we should watch it as a group.
I haven't seen it, but I remember thinking it sounded like a Brett movie.
Yeah, it. I don't know. People are introducing it as a Primer successor, as mm-hmm. like a weird, thinky, creepy movie.
Mm-hmm. I watched Primer recently.
I still haven't seen
it. It's about
that.
Time travel, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Primer's good. You got to watch it a couple times. We could do that. We could talk about that shit. Mm-hmm. But the preview made it look a little too primary, where it's like, oh, it's Primer's successor because it's like the first half is Primer. So we'll see. But people like it.
My favorite movies, I think I liked Boyhood. I liked 22 Jump Street, oddly. I just saw The Drop, which I really liked very much. Not breaking any rules, sort of like The Town, but better, just like the most kind of boneheaded underworld action movie. But
is that
really
James
good.
Gandolfini?
James Gandolfini and Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy raising like a baby pit bull.
Adorable.
Yeah, it's your ovaries will pretty much explode. Yeah. Blind, that Norwegian movie about the blind chick. I thought that was really good. Anyway.
When did Snowpiercer come out?
Oh, yeah, I like Snowpiercer too.
Was that this year?
Yeah, it was this year.
Yeah, that's probably the one I liked the most. And the Macon Blair movie didn't.
Oh yeah, I liked that one too. Blue Ruin. That was last year, but whatever.
Yeah, I like. What movies have I even ever seen?
I liked Snowpiercer, but I wouldn't put it on the top list. Like I thought it was interesting and weird, but
yeah.
I don't think I've liked any movies this year.
I Which like is, Guardians, man. Whatever.
No, Guardians.
I didn't like Guardians.
Guardians is like a warm comfort blanket.
Nothing wrong with a warm comfort blanket.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be on a top list.
All right. I didn't say it,
if
but
the
it was
blanket's
good.
Giving you a hand job by itself, like it's a ghost blanket, then all right.
I really want to see Boyhood. I haven't seen that yet. But I did just see one Richard Linklater movie that was fucking great. Slacker? Have you seen Slacker?
I never watched that one, no.
It's so great. It's because it's like I got it introduced to it by it has no plot. It's just it follows these people
it's
around
his style.
In Austin, Texas, and there's no main characters. It just follows, you know, a couple people talking about nothing and yeah. then another couple people talking about nothing and following them and then the camera, you know, sees another person then follows them.
Does it end on a crane shot just going higher and higher until it fades into the clouds?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
So that didn't come out this year, but that was my absolute.
He's gonna take a bad Nathan, and they're gonna take a bad Nathan too.
Gonna end it on a fade out, cause there's no conclusion.
It's great. That was a movie recommended by Keith Lowell Jensen, who's a Sacramento comedian who I really like, and he said watch this movie, and
yeah.
I watched it. And
well,
it was
fuck that guy.
So good. No, uh-huh. You need to see it. Fuck you, guy.
Aaron Barrett, any favorite movies this year?
I don't watch a lot of movies, and if the ones that I've probably watched that are recent probably didn't come out this year. I watched Tron Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think?
I liked it. I liked that story, you know.
That's kind of one of those
the special effects.
You say
great.
You liked it, but you're like, you have to say it in a certain tone of voice. You're like, I liked it. You got to go higher when you say that you liked it.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's a form of denial.
Yeah.
Another good documentary that I saw, I think it came out last year too, was Beware Mr. Baker.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one. Yeah, I did see that.
Really good
movie. I like that a lot.
Documentary, whatever.
That's pretty great.
I don't watch a lot of movies, actually.
Yeah, Beware Mr. Baker is a great movie. That actually, like, I mean, you're a drummer, so that actually... I love to watch drummers. I enjoy... I think that's the most interesting aspect of rock music a lot of the time. I don't know. I just like if I'm at a concert, like I enjoy looking at what the drummer's doing.
Yeah.
And like that movie made me understand it on a deeper level than I probably would have otherwise.
What a life he's had. And
powerhouse drummer, you know, but all that African stuff of him living over there and learning that stuff, you know, found its way into his music, you mm-hmm. know.
I like when people are like, oh, people compare me to Keith Moon and
he's
and John like, Bonham was like, fuck those guys. Like, those guys are just rock drummers. Like, I do all this other stuff. All right. And then you watch it and you're like, all right, I guess he kind of has a point.
Well, yeah. And even, I don't remember what year it was, 2006 maybe, when Cream did a reunion. They did like three shows at the Royal Albert Hall or something. And, you know, what's funny about him is even in 1969, he looked 70 years old. You know?
He's got that weird, like, just decrepit ginger look all his entire life.
And but one of those things about drumming, though, is a lot of it is technique. And so that's why he can still do it at his age, is because, you know, it's really all in the fingers and the wrists and everything. And
being able to keep like 10 different beats going like in different extremities.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who definitely has a lot of good independence on all of his limbs.
Yeah.
I gotta go.
All right, one more voicemail.
All right.
Hey, this is Gary. Could you just tell President Obama that Mandy is a fool and that he should ride with me for my pleasure?
I didn't even check that one. So that was just a reach into the grab bag. He could have been
oh
like,
God, are they all like that? Wait. That would be amazing if they're all just Gary.
This one also mentions Gary from Fremont. Oh. We have a character, Gary from Fremont.
Yeah, this is Gary from Fremont. I just want to say that, you know, if you're going to send pictures of yourself naked to somebody, then you got to be prepared for letting other people see them on the internet because, you know, Kate Upton actually already sent out pictures naked of herself. So who's to say she's not the one who did it? Okay, what is your name?
Yeah, hi, Gary from Fremont. I just want to let everyone know that I'm going to be jerking off to these pictures. I don't care whether they're stolen or whether they're sent to me directly. Gary sent to Gary via Gary mail.
Gary, do you want to go on the air and talk about this?
Yeah, hi, this is Gary from Fremont. I'd like to go on the air.
Hey, this is Gary from Fremont. Thing is, I just want to say that if you're going to talk to Mike Tyson, you better be prepared not to bring up certain things that he doesn't want to bring up. Because the way I see it is you talk a man to his face, you know, and if you give him what he wants, he's going to give you what you want, and maybe you don't want that. And that's the thing about a man.
Gary, I don't want to cut you off, but yeah, hi, this is Gary from Fremont.
what is this next voicemail say?
I don't know yet.
What's up, Frauders? Chat up, Rock's calling again. Just sitting back here with my boy Jackie Jump, and we're taking some fat hits at Jankum. And just listening to the podcast from last week, just wanted to say what a great job you guys are doing. That Gary from Fremont sounds like a card. Ooh, what a cut up. Anyway, keep doing the thing, boys. You're kicking ass. Keep it going. All right, listening for more. Later.
Yeah.
That was nice. Thank you.
Yeah,
nice.
Oh, can you go?
Delightfully not racist.
Can you go to the Vine that I
not
made
one
real quick?
Mention of the Chinese causing 9/11.
How do I find that?
All right, so go to, I guess, vine.com. And then Alib 1234567 8 9. By the way, you can find my vines on.
On the most annoying address in the world.
It's got all the numbers.
I guess
you need a number. Matt's got you covered. You need a 4. He's got it. You need a 7. That's
Brett,
his.
Brett, just monologue for a second.
You want me to do this?
Go to Twitter. Twitter's good.
I've been caught in situations where I shout Mandy is a fool to strangers now.
Mandy is a fool. Oh, it's impossible to stop doing.
It's really hard to get out of that
cycle.
Mandy
is a fool.
People will ask me things like, would you like super salad? And I will say, Mandy is a fool. People will say, hey, you can't park your car there. And I will say, Mandy is a fool. That one actually works because I'm in a car.
There it was.
Password attempts. I'll type in Mandy is a fool.
Mandy is a fool. Ride with me. Hold on. There it is. I found it.
But where is it?
You just had it.
What are you guys looking for?
Just a vine that I made. My vines.
God damn it.
Sorry. Hold on.
There it is.
Okay. All right.
That was harder than it. All right.
Come on. Ride with me.
I take the bus all the time.
Yep.
The naive cut on her line is the best part.
Ride with me.
I take the bus all the time.
Oh.
I had chortled like a jerk off when I saw that for the first time.
Good, good. All right, I gotta get out of here.
All right, well we're getting out of here anyway.
Face of Xfinity.
Oh shit! Sorry. stupid pre-roll. Anyway, let's take it out of here.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
You guys, thanks for listening. I don't know why you do, but I like it.
I enjoy your confusion with not being able to find another thing to
listen
to.
Thanks, Aaron Barrett. This has been...
thanks for having me.
Do you have any plugs, any shows, anything, music or comedy?
Let's see. Yeah, probably. I'll be in Livermore at Sanctuary Lounge next Thursday. I'll be on Mutiny Radio tomorrow night, mutinyradio.fm on Don't Talk Black with Sean Lamar at 10 p.m. And that's about it for now. Yeah.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, man.
We're glad to...
good to rekindle some
memories. If you remember any other Tommy Wiseau stories, we're always happy to hear them.
Okay.
And Brett?
Hi.
Keep doing what you do.
Yeah.
Matt Lieb, thanks a lot.
Yeah, of course.
Hey.
I'm not going to say Brendan's line, but... Google Voice number 415-275-0030. We love hearing from you. 415-275-0030. Frockcast@gmail.com. Keep rocking. Do we have any SoundCloud things yet?
Oh, yeah. I think this week will be the first time we're available on SoundCloud. If not, next week. So we have to upload it first.
Here's the fun thing about SoundCloud. You can leave second-by-second comments on everything. Super pumped up.
Every
second is just going to be ride with me.
Scroll through my own
Mandy is a fool.
Screeching voice
for my pleasure.
To what other people think
for
about
my pleasure.
Every broken fucking syllable.
All right, I'm outie.